pass out. She heard herself answering, "They took it, the men who brought me here." Emma couldn't stop staring at the Countess's mangled body. Was she that way because Willie had stomped on her? It crossed Emma's mind to wonder how someone could look like that and be alive. But then she remembered that the Countess wasn't alive.
"You lost it!"
The woman grabbed the bars of her cage as if she intended to rip them free.
"You can't have lost it!"
"I couldn't help it. Emma stopped herself. The witch's head had dropped, her shoulders were shaking, and she was making little whimpering sounds. She was crying.
"Hey,"
Emma said quietly, squatting down, "are you all right?" The Countess looked up. Tears streamed down the thick grooves of her face.
"Do you have any conception of what I have been through? I died more than 2,000 years ago. The dead do not feel the passage of time. I do. I felt every day as I waited for your brother to restore me to life, but I never gave up hope. Even 40 years ago, when the Dire Magnus himself came to this world and began all this."
She waved her gnarled hand to indicate the prison, the shanty town.
"I did not doubt but that I would one day succeed, and then I did. I came back."
"And Willie squashed you like a bug." The Countess's already twisted face contorted even more.
"Yes. And I was returned to this hell as the warped creature you see, captured instantly by the Dire Magnus's minions and brought here. But still I clung to hope. Of what? That you would come and retrieve the book, that if nothing else, even if I spent the rest of time trapped in this wretched place, in this wretched body, that you would carry out my revenge and destroy the Dire Magnus. But you lost the book. You failed utterly and totally. So no, I am not all that."
And she spat, disgusted, on the floor of her cage. Emma said nothing for a moment. She had no idea what waiting for something for 2,000 years and not getting it might feel like, but she guessed it would feel pretty bad. And after giving the Countess's words the amount of silent consideration they seemed to deserve, Emma accorded them 3 seconds. She said, "So, how do you remember me? Even Dr. Pym couldn't remember me. How is it you can?" The Countess stared at her. She seemed exhausted by her tirade and to be debating whether to answer Emma's question or simply retreat to her corner. Finally, she said,
"I once wielded the Reckoning, girl. Not for long, I grant you, but it left its mark. Death could not touch my memories. Now, leave me alone."
She started to crawl away. "Hey, wait!"
"It is over."
The witch sounded merely tired now, not even angry.
"You've lost your only chance, our only chance."
"Wait, I don't understand any of this. Just tell me, I get why you can remember me, but those creeps who brought me here, they're not like other dead people either." Emma wasn't quite sure why she was pursuing this point, but she sensed it was important. It was related somehow to the Reckoning, and the Countess knew the answer. "They talk and act almost like real people. Evil people, yeah, but..."
"Shut up! Just stop talking."
The Countess shook her head, but it was more in resignation than anything else.
"They are but tools of the Dire Magnus. They remember no more of their lives than these fools."
She jerked her chin toward the men and women in Emma's cell.
"But His power here is very great. He finds weak spirits and forces them to do his bidding. He winds them up like dolls and sets them into motion. The men who brought you here, they may have given a semblance of intention, but they are empty inside.
Emma thought of Harold Barnes and the tall man who'd captured her, of the bald man at the desk, how they moved with more purpose than the rest of the dead, but there was still a vagueness in their eyes. Everything the Countess said matched Emma's own observations. Only Harold Barnes had been different after she'd given him the memory of his Nanny Marge. She'd seen it in his face. What about those wizard guys in the red robes?
The Necromati?
Yeah, I know what they're called, Emma said testily, wishing she had said the name, since she had actually remembered it. What about them?
Their master shares with them some of his power, but in the end they are no different from the others. Since the beginning of time, only two have ever come to the world of the dead and managed to keep their memories, myself and the Dire Magnus.
So, what is this place? Why are all these people locked up? You've got to tell me that. The Countess looked at Emma, and a leering, wolfish grin spread across her face.
Yes, child, I will tell you that.
She edged closer to the bars.
You've stumbled onto the Dire Magnus's great secret, the source of his newfound power. And he is stronger now, is he not, in the world above?
Yeah. Rourke said this whole war was something he never could have done before.
And did Pym ever tell you how the Dark One lived as long as he did?
Emma knew that he had, in the elfish forest at the bottom of the world after she and Michael had escaped from the volcano. But Emma had hardly listened. Kate had just returned from the past and died. Gabriel had been hurt and, well, who could really pay attention to everything the wizard said anyway?
You don't remember, do you? What a waste. I actually feel bad for Pym having to deal with such a blockhead.
Emma started to say something along the lines of how funny it had been to watch Willie stomp the Countess like she was an ant, but in an act of self-control that would have surprised anyone who had ever met her, she kept her mouth shut.
You see,
the Countess said,
the universe has been
blown up and put back together over and over, Emma said. I remember that part.
Aren't you a bright penny? Well, long ago the Dire Magnus reached into those previous versions of the universe and pulled out 9 different incarnations of his spirit, his essence, his soul, whatever word you like, and he spread them out across time so that he would be reborn again and again.
He can do that? Emma said.
He has done it, child. Is that not proof enough?
Emma acknowledged that this was a fair point.
But the question,
the Countess brought her sagging lips even closer,
is what happens at that moment when one Dire Magnus dies and the next is born?
Do you want me to guess? Emma asked. 'Cause Dr. Pym always asks questions like that, but then just answers them himself. The witch looked annoyed.
A transference. The spirit of the dying Dire Magnus is grafted onto the spirit of the new, along with all the old one's memories and powers. You've met your enemy, have you not? And he seemed to be one being, one person. The truth is that inside him were the spirits of each previous incarnation, quilted together into a patchwork soul.
Emma thought about Rafe, the boy Kate had known in the past, who had saved her life and, in doing so, become the Dire Magnus. According to the Countess, the spirits and memories of each Dire Magnus had basically latched onto his own. No wonder Kate believed Rafe was still alive in there. Maybe he actually was. The Countess went on.
And one spirit, pay attention now, is the seat of magic in all of us. Its very substance is magic. And so each time he's taken on a new spirit, his own store of magic, his power, has grown.
Emma shook her head. That doesn't explain how he's so much stronger now. He would have been just as powerful 100 years ago or whatever, and Dr. Pym...
I'm coming to that. So, 40 years ago, Pym and his companions bested him, killed him. They fought their battle won, but the Dire Magnus had prepared, burying his memories where death could not touch them. Like me, he intended to return to the living world.
There was a commotion in the arena. Emma stayed where she was, listening.
Yet, if he did return, he needed power. Power to wage war against the magical world. Power to defeat Pym and his allies. Power to finally seize control of the books. Only, where to find it? Especially now that he was trapped in this wasteland. The answer was all around him. For it is not merely witches and wizards whose spirits are infused with magic. All beings claim this gift. And the Dark One reasoned that if his power had grown each time he'd taken on the spirit of his former self, then would it not also grow if he consumed the spirits of others, say, 100 others, or 1,000, or 10,000? You see, in killing him, Pym sent his enemy to a world of spirits ready-made to be devoured.
But, Emma's voice was beginning to shake, why did he have to wait till he was here? Why couldn't he just eat the spirits of people when they were alive?
Think, child. Each time he consumed another spirit, it brought with it all the memories of that person's being. And on the scale he intended, he would have had thousands of memories swarming and shouting inside himself.
Emma remembered touching the reckoning and the voices clamoring inside her. She said, he would have gone crazy.
Exactly. And in the world of the dead, the spirits have no memories. They are empty vessels.
Emma turned and looked at the listless figures in the cage. Did they know that they were basically food for the Dire Magnus? She hadn't been able to imagine a worse fate than having the memories of the people you'd loved taken from you, to be so awfully, terribly alone, and yet here was such a fate.
The fire serves as a portal,
the witch said,
for him to call up the souls of the dead.
Aha! Emma was thinking of how, when Rourke had taken her to the Dire Magnus's tent, she'd seen the boy Rafe kneeling in the fire. She remembered thinking she saw shapes in the flames. Had those been the spirits of the dead?
I think he made one of those portals for me, too. When he tried to bond me with the Reckoning, he pulled my spirit out of my body and sent it through a fire. He sent it here.
He collected the dead for years,
the Countess went on, as if Emma had not spoken.
Housed them in this prison, and since he's returned to the world above, he's been using them to feed his power. Of course, soon he will have the books. Power that dwarfs even this.
Emma was still trying to process all this when the shouts and curses from outside rose sharply. The Countess gave a ghastly smile.
But see for yourself.
Emma rushed to the front of her cage and peered down. 6 or 7 guards, Emma looked, but did not see Harold Barnes, were using whips and sticks to herd 50 or so men, women, and children up to and then over the edge of the pit. Then Emma saw 3 of the red-robed sorcerers, the necromanti, emerge from a passage under the cells. One of them leaned on a gnarled wooden staff, and Emma felt a shiver of recognition as, in the dying light, she made out an all-white eye in the shadows of the man's face. The figures in the pit were just visible amid the clouds of black smoke, and Emma could hear them choking, see them struggling for air. And although Emma had expected more ceremony, the old white-eyed sorcerer simply gestured with his staff, and flames shot across the bottom of the pit and exploded upward. Emma raised an arm to protect her eyes, and when she looked again, the flames had already died, and there was only a great black cloud billowing into the air. The pit was empty.
"They're gone." "Not gone," the witch said. "With him, as you will be soon."
"You're gonna tell them, aren't you? You're gonna tell them who I am." The Countess smiled the same wolfish grin.
"And why would I do that? If I told the necromanti who you were, they would take you across the plain to the portal to the world above and send you through to their master, carrying the book and yourself like an offering. I did not lie. The last thing I want is for the Dire Magnus to achieve his goal. In this, you and I are together. No, child, I will not tell."
Then she crawled back to the shadows on the far side of her cage and was quiet. Emma stood there, very still, saying nothing. Something was happening in her mind. It took her a few moments to realize what it was. The experience was so novel, but finally she had to admit that it was a plan taking shape, the pieces slowly fitting together. It was a dangerous plan, incredibly so, and she clenched her fists and willed another, less risky plan to emerge. But there was no other. This was the only way, and if it succeeded, the Dire Magnus would not survive. But probably, she thought, neither would she. Chapter 21 Judgment. The cage shook from the impact of footsteps on the ladder, and then the guard's head came into view. It was the tall one, the one who had hit Emma in the mouth and taken Michael's knife, which was there, still tucked in his belt. Night had fallen, but Emma could see, thanks to the torches burning in the arena, the constant reddish glow from the pit, and the dozens of small fires speckled across the dark expanse of the shantytown. Since early that evening, the grim-faced men who served the Dire Magnus, directed by the necromanti, had been removing cage after cage of prisoners and forcing the men, women, and children into the pit. Emma had watched it all, horrified, for though she knew they were already dead, and though she had observed many times that existence in the world of the dead would be akin to hell, it sickened her to know they were being consumed by the Dire Magnus. Not to mention that each spirit that went into the pit made their enemies stronger, and she couldn't think of that without thinking of Kate and Michael and Gabriel in the world above, and what they might be facing. "What is it?" the tall guard demanded of the Countess. She had been hurling down abuse and curses for several minutes. "Or do I have to shut you up?"
"You're a fool,"
the Countess hissed. She was on the floor of her cell, as her legs were unable to support her.
"Don't you know who this child is?"
This was her cue, and Emma gripped the bars of her cage and shouted,
"Shut up! Shut up!" "She's the one your master is looking for, the living girl, the keeper of the reckoning. You locked her up with the others. You were going to feed her to the fire. What would your master have done then?
She's lying. She's a liar. Don't listen to her.
The Countess ignored her.
She brought you the reckoning itself, and you didn't even realize. She said some fool of a clerk took it. She laughed about what idiots you all are. Ha!
Shut up, Emma wailed. Please! I'll just shut up! You promised!
The tall man stepped across the scaffolding, reached between the bars, and seized Emma's arm. He pressed two fingers against the underside of her wrist. Emma struggled and made protesting noises, but there was no breaking his grip. It seemed she could feel her own pulse pounding against the man's fingertips. Then, still holding her, he took a key off his belt.
"The Diamagnus must learn what I did," the Countess shouted. "He must reward me. He must forgive me."
Emma didn't look at the witch as the man pulled her from the cage and carried her down the ladder. She fought, punching, kicking, scratching, but soon they were on the floor of the arena, engulfed in a scene of chaos. Shouts and cries of anger, smoke, heat, people being struck and driven about. Emma guessed there were maybe 30 guards, along with 5 of the red-robed necromanti. She'd already spotted the rat-faced, black-haired man she'd seen earlier. Emma looked, but did not see Harold Barnes. With his hand on her arm, the tall guard dragged her over to the pit, stopping a few feet from the edge. A single red-robed figure stood looking down into the smoke and flames. The tall guard said nothing, and after a moment, the figure turned, still leaning on his gnarled black stick. The old man's one grey eye studied her, but it was his blind white eye that unnerved Emma. She imagined it saw more clearly than the good one, as if it could see into her mind and heart, see her entire plan. Despite the heat from the fire, she shivered. "It will work," she told herself. "It has to work." If it didn't, she had just doomed herself, her brother and sister, everyone. It had taken some time to coax the Countess out of her dark corner, but Emma had persisted, as there were things only the witch could tell her.
"I mean it. I have a plan."
"Oh, you have a plan. Oh, we are saved. Shut up. Do you want your stupid revenge or not?"
Finally, the witch had dragged herself back across her cage.
"Well?"
"First, you gotta tell me, when I get the book, how do I kill someone? I know you know. You used it to kill all those giants."
The Countess had chuckled.
"Yes, I slaughtered those fools. You should have felt the earth buckle when they fell. Timber!"
Yeah, so, how do you do it?"
"Do you know what a reckoning is, child? The meaning of the word?"
Emma had opened her mouth to reply. She knew this because Michael had told her, but the Countess was too quick.
"A reckoning is a debt, and there is one debt that every living being must eventually pay. Death. When you engage the magic of the book and fix your mind upon a person, the reckoning calls that debt due, and the person's spirit is severed from their body and brought to this world. Even the Diamagnus is not exempt from this."
"What about the voices?"
"What voices?"
"You know, the ones that start screaming when you touch the book."
"I heard no voices."
Emma had studied the other's face. The woman had seemed to be telling the truth. Could it be that despite allowing the Countess to kill the giants, there were things the book revealed only to its keeper? Lucky her.
"What is it you intend?" girl.
Emma had hesitated for an instant, then reasoned that if the woman was going to betray her, she could have at any time. There was no reason to hold back now.
According to you, all I have to do to kill the Diamagnus is call up the magic and think about him. Only first, I've got to get one of those necromancy guys to give me the book. Well, I know how to do that.
And she would just put up with the screaming voices. She had to. There was no other option. The Countess had sneered.
You arrogant little fool. You cannot trick the necromancy into simply giving you the book.
I'm not going to trick them. One of them's going to help me.
And then she'd told the witch about the old white-eyed sorcerer, and how he'd once been a friend and ally of Dr. Pym, and about Harold Barnes and what she'd done to him. Finally, the witch had started nodding, murmuring,
"Yes, perhaps it could work,"
and had even suggested that she call for the jailers, saying it would be less suspicious than Emma calling them herself. After hearing the guard's report, the old man spoke to the black-haired, rat-faced necromantus, who then scurried away across the arena. The white-eyed sorcerer stepped closer, the point of his staff stamping dully in the heat-cracked mud. Emma guessed he was taller than she was, but he was so stooped over, like someone who had spent his life hunched at a desk, that their eyes were level. As she stood facing him, Emma was aware of another cage's worth of people being herded toward the pit, and she glanced toward them without thinking. It was like being struck in the chest. One of the figures, his face blank and confused, was Wallace. Emma had met the dwarf just once during the Christmas party at the mansion in Cambridge Falls. He'd been more Kate's and Michael's friend than hers, but he had given his life trying to rescue her. And now he was being pushed over the edge of the pit, and she could only watch, powerless. She looked back at the old man and ordered herself not to be weak. The tall guard stood several feet to the side. Emma kept her voice low.
"I know who you are. You used to be Dr. Pym's friend. You helped him fight the Diamagnus. You've got to remember."
The old man stared at her, then said,
"Your words mean nothing to me."
He waved his staff, and flames exploded from the pit. When Emma was able to look again, Wallace was gone. She felt sick to her stomach, and her plan suddenly seemed childish and flimsy. It came down to this. Emma knew that when she and Harold Barnes had touched the reckoning together, she'd restored at least some, and perhaps all, of his memories. That had started her thinking. All those voices shouting in the book, what if they were the memories that had been taken from the dead? And if she'd given Harold Barnes his memory back, couldn't she do it again? She just had to manage it so that she and the old sorcerer were both holding the reckoning at the same time. Then she'd restore his memories. He'd realize who he was, and he'd help her kill the Diamagnus. The rat-faced necromantus was hurrying forward, clutching the book to his chest, the bald clerk trailing behind. There was no more time for doubt. Emma took a step closer to the sorcerer, to be next to him when he received the reckoning. Then the old man said,
"Hold her!"
A pair of large, strong hands seized her wrists, pinning them behind her back. Panic swept over her, and she screamed and struggled. The old sorcerer ignored her and spoke to the necromantian guards gathered about.
"After all these years, our master will finally possess the books, but only beings of pure spirit can pass through the fire, and the master wishes the book and keeper complete. We will go to the last portal, the one in the mountains across the plain."
He began to give orders. They would leave immediately. The rat-faced necromantus would stay and finish herding the dead into the pit.
A voice whispered in Emma's ear.
You saw Nanny March?
She jerked her head around. It was Harold Barnes who held her wrists. He was leaning close, and there was a desperate, searching look in his eyes.
You really saw her? You saw my Nanny March?
Recovering from her surprise, Emma nodded, and the man, without making a sound, bit his lip as tears welled in his eyes.
Please, she whispered, you have to let me go, please.
And for a moment, it seemed that it was just her and Harold Barnes alone in the arena. Then he nodded, and his hands opened. The old man was still giving orders when Emma leapt forward and grasped his hand, her fingers stretching to touch the hard leather of the book. Instantly the magic rose up, filling her, and she was overwhelmed with relief and gratitude. Then the arena, the fire, the guards, the necromati, all fell away. Emma saw a brilliant blue sea, felt salt air against her skin, and saw a man with a tanned face, thick hands and a quick smile. She saw him in a boat, teaching a boy, teaching her, how to care for his nets. He was the sorcerer's father, a fisherman, and he was the boy's entire world. And the day he disappeared at sea, Emma felt the hole it left in the boy's life. And then she saw a young woman with dark hair and dark eyes, and felt the old man's, the young man's, love for her. And then she saw another boy, the sorcerer's son, with hair like his mother's and his father's grey eyes. And Emma felt how the wound made by the death of his father had finally begun to heal. Emma was knocked back by the rat-faced necromantus. She landed on her side close to the edge of the pit. A stillness had descended on the arena. The old man's head had dropped forward. He sagged against his staff. Emma was scarcely breathing. She willed the old man to look up. One glance would tell her if he remembered who he was. Seconds passed. Still no one moved. The thought came to her that touching the book, being in the old man's memories, hadn't been anything like how Michael described using the Chronicle, how he experienced a person's whole life in an instant. She'd only seen the people the old sorcerer had loved, the same thing that had happened with Harold Barnes. What if the sorcerer only remembered those three people and not the rest of his life? Her plan was doomed to fail. How could she have been so stupid? Who was she to try and plan anything? Then the old man raised his head, and everything inside Emma turned to ash. His face was just as blank as before. He said, "Bring a table. We will perform the bonding here." Emma froze. What did that mean? Why would he say that? She lay there, tense, hoping, telling herself it was stupid to hope. "But," the rat-faced man said, "the master has spoken to me." The old man said, "He needs her power. Once she is bonded to the reckoning, we will throw her into the pit, and her spirit and the magic within it will be consumed by his. Her body will perish in the flames. Now, bring a table." So she had failed, after all. Emma knew she should jump up, snatch away the book, and try to use it before they stopped her. But she couldn't even summon the strength to rise from the ground. So crushing was the weight of her failure. And it would have been pointless anyway. Her enemies would have been on her in an instant. The rat-faced man rushed off. Then hands, Harold Barnes's again, lifted her to her feet. And the old man, still holding the book, stepped closer. He made a gesture, and Harold Barnes moved away, eager, it seemed, to distance himself. The sorcerer's face was in front of hers. When he spoke, it was in a whisper only she could hear. "Child." And in that instant, Emma saw that he'd remembered who she was. She was on the verge of letting out a cry of joy when the old man held up his hand, still whispering. "Quiet,"
Others are watching. If they suspect what you have done, you are doomed.
Emma glanced past him at the three red-robed sorcerers standing nearby. They were indeed watching closely. With effort, she forced her face into an expression of defiance and struggled to speak through the emotion choking her throat and chest.
You really remember that you're a friend of Dr. Pym and hate the Dire Magnus? He kept you like a slave, you know.
The old man moved his body to shield her as much as possible and allowed himself a sad smile.
I remember everything. Pym, our friendship, our fight against the Dark One, even my years being bent to the enemy's will. Though what I remember most is my father, my wife, my son.
And perhaps it was the mention of the old sorcerer's loved ones, the memory of whom was still so fresh in Emma's mind, but the tide of feeling inside her could no longer be denied. She had been scared and alone and exhausted for too long. She finally had an ally, someone to bear part of the burden. Her body began to shake with sobs. She wiped at her tears, whispering,
"I'm sorry. I'm sorry. I'll stop. It's just..."
"Have no fear, child. It is reasonable you might cry. The others will not perceive the true cause, but every moment now is crucial."
Emma took several deep, trembling breaths and gathered herself.
"Right. So, give me the book, and I'll kill him."
The old man gave a small shake of his head.
"The Dire Magnus is no mere man. If you attempt to kill him and fail, we are finished. You will have only one chance, and you must be able to command the full power of the Reckoning. That is why I have to complete the bonding. The book will then acknowledge you as its keeper."
"But the Countess killed a bunch of giants, and she wasn't bound to the book. Why do I have to be?"
It surprised her that he actually intended to complete the bonding, that it hadn't been simply a ploy to gain time. And it surprised her as well how much the idea scared her. Though the truth was, for days now, whenever she'd thought about the Reckoning, she'd felt a shiver of fear. In her typical fashion, she'd done her best to ignore it, but then she touched the book, heard all the voices trapped inside, and her fear had grown a hundredfold. What would it mean to be bound to such a thing? What might the book demand of her, take from her? Emma didn't know, and she didn't want to know.
"The bonding is necessary, because there has never before been a creature like the Dire Magnus. He wears the spirits of his former selves like armor. The book's full force must be brought to bear. You must trust me."
Emma knew that she had no choice. She gave him a short nod. Abruptly, the old man leaned on his staff, tears welling in his eyes.
"Forgive me, child. It is the memories. You have given me back those I loved most in life, and I am undone."
He reached out and laid a hand on her arm.
"I am thankful you judged me worthy."
He stopped, looking at her.
"What is it?"
For the old man's words, seemingly innocent, had called back something the Countess had said after Emma had first explained her plan. The witch had asked if Emma knew there was a second meaning of the word reckoning.
"Yeah, it means a judgment."
"Exactly," the Countess had said, "and there is a legend whispered through the centuries that the keeper of the Reckoning will judge the dead. But how? What if, as you seem to believe, some remnant of the dead is stored in the book? Their voices, their memories, and it falls to you to separate the just from the unjust, the good from the evil. I do not say your plan will not succeed, but I suspect there is more to mastering the Reckoning than you imagine."
At the time, Emma had brushed aside the notion. She'd only been concerned with what could help her kill the Dire Magnus. What did she know or care about judging the dead? But the old man had thanked her for judging him worthy. Why? She hadn't done anything. At least, she didn't think so. The old sorcerer had already moved on, his voice a dry whisper.
Remember, child, all is lost if the others suspect I am with you. During the bonding, I must be as brutal as the Dark One himself.
But what did you mean about judging you worthy? His grey eyes stared at her, searching.
Him didn't tell you?
Tell me what?
He didn't tell me anything. Child,
he gripped her arm fiercely,
you must judge them. That is the task of the Keeper. The bonding will unite you with the book, but to truly wield its power, you must judge them all. Pym should have told you.
But he didn't. What are you... That was as far as she got, for just then the rat-faced necromantus arrived carrying a short-legged table, and the old sorcerer forced her roughly to the ground. The table was placed before her. The tall guard stepped behind her and gripped her shoulders. Things were moving fast now, too fast. What did he mean she had to judge them? Judge who? The dead? How? And why hadn't Dr. Pym told her? Had he not known, or had he planned to tell her, but died before he'd gotten the chance? The old sorcerer laid the reckoning open on the table, and Emma stared down at the blank page and imagined she saw the words appearing, as they had back in the cave, "Release them." And imagine, too, that she could hear the millions of clamoring voices.
You must judge them.
The old man held out his hand, and the tall guard passed him Michael's knife.
Wait,
Emma said, alarmed now. What are you doing with that?
The actual bonding is simple, the sorcerer said, though painful. We must ensure your hand stays on the page.
He gestured, and the tall guard grabbed Emma's wrist and held her hand poised over the book. The old sorcerer gave the knife to the rat-faced necromantus, who took it, smiling, and stepped to the table.
Wait!
The fear was rising fast inside her.
Just wait!
She looked at the old sorcerer, but his face was empty, a mask. The rat-faced man raised the knife.
Yes!
He sneered.
Scream!
And before Emma could cry out, before she could utter a word, the guard forced her palm onto the page, and the knife plunged down through the back of her hand and pinned it to the book. Emma scarcely felt the knife going in. Partly, that was because of the sharpness of the blade. But more so, it was because the moment she touched the book, the magic surged through her, and millions of voices, millions of lives threatened to tear her apart. Second by second, she could feel herself losing touch with who she was, as if she stood on a beach and the sand was disappearing beneath her feet, and there was nothing but emptiness below. Then, abruptly, she was back, on her knees, in the dust of the arena. She had somehow managed to pull her hand off the page, though she'd done so only by sliding it farther up the blade of the knife. She could see the blood dripping down. Then the rat-faced man stuck the pommel of the knife with his fist, driving it deeper into the wood of the table, so that the knife's metal guard pinned her hand to the page. And again she felt the magic rising up, and along with it the voices, overwhelming her, drowning her. She tried to push them back, to fight them, but it was too much. She could feel herself breaking apart. Then, again, she was back, on her knees beside the pit. Acting on simple animal instinct, she'd managed to loosen the knife by jerking her arm back and forth, though doing so had made the gash in her hand even wider. The rat-faced necromantus cursed and lunged forward. In the moment before he reached her, Emma looked up, searching for the face of the old sorcerer. She didn't care who knew that he was helping her. She needed him to do something, say something to stop this. And she saw, stepping from one of the passageways with Dr. Pym at his side, Gabriel.
She had to be dreaming. It couldn't be Gabriel. The living couldn't enter the world of the dead, but it was him, which could mean only one thing, that he had somehow found a way in. Wasn't this exactly what she'd hoped and prayed for since she'd arrived in this terrible place? He wasn't dead, she knew that. He couldn't be dead. Gabriel, her friend and protector, had found a way to enter the world of the dead so he could come to her when she needed him most, and seeing him as the rat-faced man hammered the top of the knife, forcing her hand to the page, Emma's heart filled with love. The magic rose up. The millions of voices and lives crashed over her, but she held on to her love for Gabriel, the way a person falling from a ship might cling to driftwood. She held on to it knowing that she had to, that it was her only safety, and the wave passed, and she was still there, still herself, and she found herself thinking of Kate, as if her love for Gabriel had led her naturally to it, and from there she thought of Michael, and how much she loved him, loved everything about him, and the voices still howled, but the ground below her was solid now, and secure. She could stand on it. She knew who she was, and the love she had for those three was the very basis and bedrock of her life. She opened her eyes and saw the handle of the knife sticking out of the back of her hand, the dark red blood pooling over the page and running onto the table, and the pain didn't matter, and the thronging, shouting voices didn't touch her. Gabriel and Dr. Pym were still standing at the mouth of the tunnel, not moving any closer. The old white-eyed sorcerer was leaning forward, watching her intently. She sensed motion above her and saw huge black birds landing around the arena. She understood then why the book had shown her Nanny Marge. Understood why it had shown her the old man's father and wife and son, and why both Harold Barnes and the old sorcerer had been judged worthy. She understood how she was to judge all the lives contained in the book. It was a question she had to ask. She had only to shape it in her mind, and the fate of each life would ride on the answer. And she thought again of the message the book had given her. Release them. She looked at Gabriel, and he stood there, his eyes dull, not knowing her, and she knew the truth then, the truth she wanted so badly to push away, and she felt his love for her, for it was there in the book, among all those millions of other lives, and she felt how that love had been the cornerstone of his life, and more than anything, more even than killing the dire Magnus, she wanted him to remember that. Go, she thought. And the memory flowed out of the book and through her, and she felt the storm of voices raging stronger than ever, all wanting release. She heard the rat-faced man shouting, "Something's happening! We must throw her in the pit, now!" The knife was yanked out, but she kept her hand pressed down flat and hard, the blood wet and thick between her hand and the page. And even as the tall guard reached down and seized her wrist, she formed the question in her mind, and somewhere deep inside the book, a key turned in a lock. The memories poured forth, out of the book, out of her, and though it felt like an eternity, she knew it only took an instant. And then her hand fell away, and she collapsed on the ground. She could hear screaming and shouting, the sounds of cages being broken open. She sensed the rat-faced necromantus dragging her toward the pit. Then something knocked the man down. It was the old white-eyed sorcerer. He was wrestling with the man. She saw the other necromanti fleeing as the dead broke free from their cages, and many of the guards were now joining the prisoners as the crowd flooded the arena. And Emma realized she was cradling the book in her good hand while the other throbbed and bled. And then Gabriel was there, lifting her into his arms, just as he had so many times before, and Emma wanted to tell him that it was love, that was the basis on which the dead were judged, that was the reckoning. But she didn't say it, because she couldn't speak, because the truth she'd realized moments before was that Gabriel hadn't found some secret way into the world of the dead. There was only one way into the world of the dead. One way his memories could have gotten into the book. And she pressed her face against his chest and sobbed. Chapter 22 Michael's Army. Kate opened her eyes and sat up. Both proved to be mistakes. Pain shot through her skull as she groaned.
"Easy now, girl, easy."
She was back on her cot in the tent. It was dark outside, but a small lantern on the floor gave up a dim yellow light. On Michael's cot, leaning forward and offering her something in his hand, was the burly form of Hugo Algernon.
"Drink this."
"What is it?"
"Whiskey."
"What?"
"Kidding. It's water. You've had fever."
"Drink." She did. The water was cool and tasted marvelous. "Those children on the beach?"
"Both fine," he chuckled. "More than you can say for that imp you skewered. That was a good one, like something Claire would have done."
"Claire?"
"Your mother. She always had a spark in her."
Kate nodded, but wondered if he was just saying that to make her feel better. As it was, it did make her feel better. "What about the others in the attack?"
"All taken care of. There was only a single raider. How's your noodle?"
Kate felt the back of her head. It was still tender from where it had struck the rock, though she knew that wasn't why she passed out.
"Fine." "So," Hugo Algernon said, "how much have you told your brother about what's going on?"
Kate looked at him sharply. The lamp on the floor cast shadows across his face, and she couldn't see his eyes. How could he possibly know about Rafe appearing to her? But he went on, and she realized what he actually meant.
"The boy knows you're having trouble controlling the Atlas. You said as much yourself. Have you told him the rest, what it feels like?"
Kate shrugged. "A little. He feels some of it, too."
"But not like you do."
Kate shook her head. Hugo Algernon grunted.
"It'll get worse for both of you."
"Why? What's happening?" Kate hadn't forgotten what Rafe had told her in the Land of the Giants, his warning about the damage the books were causing, but she found she needed to hear it from someone else. Hugo Algernon pulled a small bottle from his pocket, uncorked it, and poured some into a cup. The biting, sour smell of spirits filled the tent. He took a sip and grimaced before speaking.
"There are things you need to know, you and your brother. I talked to Von Clappen and she agrees."
Kate was surprised to hear him refer to the witch with such apparent lack of venom. Hugo Algernon nodded.
"Yes, yes, I know. She's an insufferable, humorless know-it-all, but she's good at what she does."
Hugo Algernon leaned forward.
"Did Pym ever caution you about not using the books unless it was absolutely necessary?"
Kate nodded.
"Ever say why?"
"Not really."
"What do you know about quantum mechanics?"
"Nothing."
"Good. Load of rubbish."
"What's that got—"
"Not a thing. Don't interrupt.
First off,
you have to understand that when it's working right, the universe is this perfectly balanced mechanism, all the pieces fitting together just so. Only it's fragile. And when Pym and his buddies pulled out the magic that went into the books, they upset that balance. That's for starters."
He leaned closer.
"But this is where it becomes tricky, because yes, the Diomagnus is the enemy, no doubt about it. He gets hold of the books, the Reckoning especially. He'll wreak havoc and probably destroy the entire world. So that's bad, and we should do something about it, but in the end, he's not the real threat."
"Who is?" Kate asked quietly. Hugo Algernon looked at her.
You are, girl. Your family, see? The magic in the books is still connected to the magic responsible for all this. He made a gesture to indicate the world outside the tent. So, every time you and your brother and soon your sister use the books, things get more and more out of whack. The reason you passed out is that you're feeling how much harm you're causing, and it's getting worse. The universe is breaking apart at the seams. So, we'll just stop using the books. Too late for that. But there has to be something we can do. He nodded. There is. The books have to be destroyed.
And that would fix it?
Yes. The problem is that the books themselves are pretty much indestructible. I mean, the Chronicle was in a pool of lava for 1,000 years, and it doesn't have a scratch on it.
But there's a way around that, isn't there?
Kate's voice was no more than a whisper. The man sat back, poured himself more whiskey, and took a sip.
Yeah, there's a way.
And now it was Kate talking, her mind rushing forward, seeing it all making sense. The tearing she'd felt every time she used the Atlas, both in the world and inside herself, the true meaning of the prophecy. If the magic were in something that could be destroyed, like in a person like me, or Michael, or Emma, and we were to die, that would do it. That would fix things.
Hugo Algernon nodded. The magic of the Atlas is already in you. If the Chronicle's not inside your brother, it soon will be, and the same for the Reckoning once your sister gets it.
And then we die, and the universe is fixed.
Kate felt nauseous from the close tent, the smell of the man's whiskey. She wanted to get away, but she couldn't, not yet.
Then why's the Dire Magnus even matter?
I told you, he'll try to control the power, like turning a nuclear reactor into a nuclear bomb. And he'll be able to for a while, even if it means destroying this world to create another. Only sooner or later that world will spin out of control too. So, we have to stop the Dire Magnus, but we also have to destroy the books.
You mean you have to kill me and my brother and sister?
Kate said coldly.
I didn't say